Welcome to our latest edition of Tim Friedman 70s Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Tim Friedman, along with fellow Clevelander rock and roll expert Frank Ost. How are you, Frankie?
Fine. It's great to be with you again.
We are wrapping up season one with our episode 14. And thanks so much for listening, by the way. You can download it on now Apple, iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, just about anywhere you get podcasts. And we appreciate you downloading, subscribing, and listening to our 70s Rock Conversations. It's been a lot of fun, hasn't it, Frank?
Absolutely.
Learned a lot as well, especially from you, and your input is outstanding. Hall of Fame inductees learned a lot about this as well. 2007, Jay-Z introduced Grandmaster Funk and the Furious Five, and I was a little furious at that point. I like some of their music, but rock and roll, Hall of Famers.
Right, exactly. Don't understand that.
R.E.M., Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam introduced them, the Athens, Georgia group, Bill Berry, Peter Buck, Mike Mills, Michael Stipe, all students at UGA. Peter Buck, late in the 80s, described their music this way: minor key, mid-tempo, semi-folk rock balladish things.
I love it.
There are some songs on there I just love. I love listening or watching them play the song Losing My Religion, Mandolin, anything they do. It's just so laid back. And if you've seen The Storytellers on VH1 where R.E.M. appears, it's outstanding. They play everything. They released Radio Free Europe. Now, like Rush, where we talked about in our previous episode, there was an album every year from R.E.M.
Right.
Murmur, Reckoning, South Central Rain, Don't Go Back to Rockville. These are all 80s, and I do like 80s music.
Mm-hmm.
Fables of the Reconstruction, followed by Life's Rich Pageant, and my favorite of theirs, Fall on Me. You know, that's a great song.
Absolutely.
Great in concert. Their Green album, Orange Crush, and Stand, and Out of Time, 1991. In 1988, they left the IRS label, which was a division of MCA, to sign with Warner Brothers, a huge deal. But it gave them, like the Rolling Stones, remember when we talked about how the Stones were granted total control over their music?
Right.
It's very key for a rock and roller to do that. And so Warner Brothers offered them that deal. And then they re-signed to Warner Brothers in 1996 for a then whopping $80 million.
Good grief.
At the time, that was the most expensive deal ever. And I don't remember them putting out much after that.
No, I really don't. I don't think Warner Brothers got their full measure out of that one.
But $80 million went a little further back then than it does now.
Well, that's true.
The Ronettes, the American girl group from Spanish Harlem, featuring Ronnie and her older sister Estelle, her cousin Nedra Talley. You know, what'd you think of the Ronettes? They were good.
Yeah.
Yeah, overproduced, but that sounds like...
That's Phil Spector.
That sounds like Phil Spector.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ronnie's still active these days and sang with Eddie Money on that Take Me Home Tonight.
That's right.
86, which kind of restarted his career. Patti Smith, Zach De La Rocha, the vocalist for Rage Against the Machine, introduced Patti Smith, Patti Smith Group. Because the Night, the Bruce Springsteen composition, that was the biggest hit of hers. Frederick was good,
right.
You know. She went on to write a memoir called Just Kids about her time in the 70s while she was living in Manhattan and dating a fellow named Robert Mapplethorpe.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the artist.
The artist. The artiste.
Yes.
And Van Halen, the rockers out of Pasadena, the late Eddie Van Halen, Alex, Michael Anthony, the bassist and vocalist, and David Lee Roth.
And don't make no mistake about it. That band was a band with David Lee Roth.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really care for the other iterations, but boy, that David Lee Roth band.
They were good.
They were very good.
Sammy Hagar.
Yep.
Van Hagar. Sammy's Beach Bar and Grill. I was just at the one at Hopkins Airport in Cleveland not too long ago. He also has one at the McCarran Airport in Vegas, or did, and at the Harrah's Casino in St. Louis. It's just a little bar, you know, good time bar. They play some music and he has a decent menu, good drinks. And apparently, he donates all the profits for all those restaurants to charity, local charities.
Okay, very nice.
But his interest in tequila called Cabo Wabo sold his 80% interest in 2007, Sammy did, for $80 million.
Good grief.
He is quite the entrepreneur, Sammy Hagar.
And $80 million, that seems to be the number today.
So when so when David Lee Roth left, they were having a hard time finding a new lead singer.
Right.
So Sammy, I thought, was a good fit for them. What do you think?
I thought he was a good fit, and obviously they had some hits. I mean, it worked out for him well, but still much prefer the group with David Lee Roth in fronting it.
The Red Rocker, Sammy Hagar, Van mm-hmm. Hagar, you know, I Can't Drive 55, Your Love Is Driving Me Crazy, both before he joined the band, so I thought he was a good fit for them. But at the time, some artists or some bands were having a hard time finding a new lead singer. I know Journey took their hiatus in 1986, and they were looking for a lead singer to at least temporarily replace Steve Perry, like 86, 87, so they turned to Richard Page of Mr. Mister.
Okay.
But he said, no, I want to see how this thing works out, because he's just coming off Broken Wings and Kyrie and whatever. And that's about it for them.
Didn't work out too well.
Didn't. Maybe he should have joined the band. Maybe. He would have been replaced by Steve Perry, but
exactly.
Who knows? So that's the class of 07 for the Rock Hall inductions.
Nice class.
Spotlight year 1969, closing out that decade, and what a decade it was in 1960, totally different from 69, wasn't it?
It was, definitely.
Now, as only a young tyke, you were older than me, early teens, and the war was still going on, but the music was fantastic. One of the big hits of the year, Fifth Dimension, Aquarius, and Let the Sun Shine In. That's something unlike anything else they had done.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, Stolen Soul, Picnic, mm-hmm. and Up, Up, and Away, Aquarius, a great tune. Rolling Stones, Honky Tonk Women. What'd you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, what a great single that was.
Sly, Everyday People, Had Fun in the Summertime. Three Dog Night hit it big with One and Easy to Be Hard. Yep. I like Three Dog Night. They were good for a while there.
Yeah, they went on a tear in the late 60s, early 70s.
Did you ever see them in any of their
I've never seen them.
Concerts?
But supposedly they're pretty good to watch.
One of my favorite hits from the 60s, not psychedelic necessarily, but a 60s song to me is Crimson and Clover or Crystal Blue Persuasion by Tommy James and the Shondells.
Yeah,
those two were cool 60s songs.
Right at the end of the decade, yeah.
Bob Dylan, Lay Lady Lay. Friends of Distinction, Grazing in the Grass. I can't move my mouth as fast as they sing, and it's a great tune. Not the one by Hugh Masekela from like a year before, but mm-hmm. that was cool too, but Friends of the Distinction and Grazing in the Grass, and oh, I love that song. Neil Diamond, Sweet Caroline. Elvis, Suspicious Minds. Johnny Cash, Boy Named Sue. Remember that one?
Yes, absolutely.
Oliver, Good Morning Sunshine. Good Morning Starshine, rather. I liked Oliver. I didn't like Gene, but I liked Good Morning Starshine.
I was going to say, did you like Gene?
I did not like Gene. I didn't get that song. It was Honey. At least Honey was a little faster. Gene was just such a slow
plot. We could have done without Gene.
Zombies, Time of the Season. They had already broken up, but...
great record.
You know, that The Guess Who, These Eyes, and Laughing. A lot of good music that year. CCR, Bad Moon Rising, Green River, Proud Mary. Bob Seger System, Ramblin' Gamblin' Man. First
what
time we heard
a great tune.
Top R&B, get a load of these names. Edwin Starr, 25 Miles, is just what was released in 69.
Mm-hmm.
The Winstons, Color Him Father. Isley Brothers, It's Your Thing, which you still see on... with the Heineken beer commercial or something lately. Temptations, Can't Get Next to You. Marvin Gaye. Junior Walker and the All-Stars, What Does It Take? That's some great music right there.
Oh, absolutely.
That's before Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Spinners and the Stylistics came out. But Stevie Wonder was still around. Didn't really do much in 69, but he was on his way to having just a fantastic decade of the 70s. ...1969 top albums. Abbey Road, The Beatles.
Wow. My favorite Beatles album, so you know it's got to be one of my favorite of all time.
Talk about every cut on that album.
Oh, yeah.
Led Zeppelin 2. What do you think about Let It Bleed by The Stones?
I love that album. It's fantastic, and it was really one of the their first great albums. They had made a lot of great singles up to that time. But that was really one of their first great albums that came together, totally as Midnight Rambler. Oh, my goodness.
This is a year for you. I don't know when you started getting into music. I know for me, we talked about 9, 10 years old. But for you, what a year this was. The Beatles, Zeppelin, The Stones. Zeppelin with their debut album was still popular. The Who, Santana, Chicago Transit Authority.
Exactly.
You were having a great time that
year. I was in heaven.
You were. Moody Blues, On a Threshold of a Dream, The Doors, A Soft Parade. These are just great albums.
But the funny thing was about the Chicago Transit Authority album, I had never even heard that until my sister went to college the next year and brought home the second Chicago album. And I said, well, if this is the second one, what was the first one? And that's when I went back and found it.
Wow. Other groups, Blind Faith, The Kinks, Captain Beefheart, Pink Floyd, Janis Joplin, Jeff Beck, Jethro Tull. Wow. What
Blind,
a year.
Blind Faith. Mm. Wow. That was Stevie Winwood. And Eric Clapton.
Yep.
Yeah.
On the other hand, not so good songs. Lots of bubblegum that year. The number one song of the year, Ron Dante out in front with the Archies. And
the Archies,
Sugar,
yeah.
Sugar.
Absolutely.
Co-written by Andy Kim, who also went on to have a number one hit, Rock Me Gently, a few
That's
years
right.
later.
Yeah.
Sung by Ron Dante, who went on to sing backup and produce Barry Manilow's first 9 albums, or co-produce. So
well,
he
I
sang
didn't
backup on
that.
Mandy and Trying to Get the Feeling and co-produced those albums along with Barry. Now, not so good songs. We already talked about Oliver and Gene.
Yep.
Number one song. Yuck.
Hard for me to believe that was number one at any time. But
why would anybody buy that song?
There seemed to be in that time period, two different types of songs, and one that was being played on hit radio, and another that was being played on rock radio.
Because FM was just getting. Getting
right.
popular, wasn't
Just
it?
Just starting to get popular, yeah.
And maybe they needed a follow-up to a song called, like, Honey, of those mellow, different artists. But Tommy Rowe held his own that year with Dizzy, a number one hit, and
That's
Jam
right.
Up and Jelly Tight, which hit number 8 as a follow-up.
Oh, my God.
Dizzy is one of the favorites you'll hear at the ice skating rink. My wife loves going ice skating when she was a little kid, and it was... Tommy Rowe and Dizzy, anything by Neil Diamond, Partridge Family.
That's right.
Bobby Sherman had a big hit with Little Woman, which made my big sister, Mickey, very happy. The 1910 Fruit Gum Company, Indian Giver.
I remember Bubblegum that song. Pop, Boy, that's finest. A little earworm there.
Yeah. They also had Simon Says and 1-2-3 Red Light a year earlier. The Cufflinks, Tracy. Ron Dante again with his efforts, his vocals, and... Cufflinks, Tracy.
Wow.
The Flying Machine, not the one James Taylor was in, but the other group. Smile a Little Smile for Me, a little mellow.
Rosemary, yeah. I remember that one.
Debut artist, 1969. Maybe the first time we heard them, maybe not. They might have been signed that year. Santana, they appeared at Woodstock, and they broke out with their great... solo, their great first album, didn't they?
Yes, absolutely.
Isaac Hayes, would hear more from him in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Three Dog Night, Shy Lights, Billy Preston, Chicago, back then, Chicago Transit Authority, Cool and the Gang, Grand Funk Railroad, Jackson 5, Nielsen, John Lennon as a solo artist.
That's right.
Nice little group of debut artists that year.
And Harry Nilsson, another one.
Harry Nilsson,
yeah.
Spelled, by the way, Nilsson.
Yep.
One-hit wonders, some good ones. Zager and Evans, In the Year 2525, originally written 5 years earlier, wasn't recorded until 68.
What a great tune that was.
It was recorded in one take in a studio in Texas.
Is that so?
Yeah. Number one, at the time, two huge moments were the moon landing and Woodstock. So, and back then, too, space songs were getting to be popular. This whole space travel, all new to everybody. Since then, it's been covered 60 times in 7 different languages in the year 2020.
Is that true?
It's amazing.
Wow.
Spiral Staircase, spelled Starecase. Lead vocalist Pat Upton, the songwriter and vocalist, was a session musician later on with Ricky Nelson. More Today Than Yesterday.
That's right.
Good pop tune.
Great tune.
Get Together by the Youngbloods, Jesse Colin Young.
Boy, you couldn't go anywhere that year without hearing Get Together.
That was released originally 2 years earlier. It only charted at number 62, then re-released in 1969 and hit number 5. They did a bunch of club dates. They released 5 studio albums as a group and several live things, not to mention a dozen or so singles, but none of them charted until Get Together.
Get Together.
Yeah. Love Can Make You Happy by Mercy. Now, I like that better than Gene. In fact, I like it a lot better than Gene. I think you might have heard it at wedding receptions and kind of like We've Only Just Begun or something a couple of years later. Number one in the summer, it was a hit of those wedding receptions, and the pop group from Florida did hit number two, followed up by a song which only went to number 79. Remember the song Forever?
No.
I imagine
it's missed that one.
Probably sounds a little bit like the one before.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember Crazy Elephant, Gimme Gimme Good Lovin'?
I do remember Crazy. What a great name.
They released that twice in 1969. 1969 was a good year. And for one-hit wonders, that's just some of them, too.
Yeah.
Featured artist or artists, Woodstock. August 15th to the 18th, 1969, Max Yasgur's Farm in upstate New York. Anywhere between 400,000 and 500,000 people attended. Organizers planned for a few less concert goers, didn't they?
Yeah, I've heard that it was planned for about 50 to 100,000, something like that. And God knows how many came, because I've heard everything is on the low side probably about 300,000, on the high side probably about 600,000. So who knows? Well, I don't think we'll ever know how many people were actually there.
Originally, $18 was the fee for the weekend in advance, 24 at the gate, and then they just made it a free concert after a while because they had no way to keep the people in or out.
Right.
The documentary film was produced in 1970, plus a soundtrack album featuring Woodstock, written by Joni Mitchell, who did not attend. She was one of those who was invited but decided that, along with her manager, that being on the Dick Cavett Show was a better move for
her. That's right, yes.
She did write the song Woodstock, sung by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young a year later, and Matthews' Southern Comfort. Remember Ian Matthews?
Absolutely.
He had a hit, which I just heard not too long ago, called Shake It. Remember Shake It, Baby, from 1978?
Yeah, I do.
That's him. Day one, Friday, Ritchie Havens, Before the Rain. But it looked like Ritchie Havens, by the time he was done, it rained on him. He was soaked in sweat.
Yep.
Nobody else was there to perform due to...
They wouldn't let him go off stage.
No, there's nobody there. They were all stuck in traffic. He played an 11-song set, including the improvised Motherless Child, which became the song Freedom.
That's right.
He's fantastic, and he's just running out of tunes.
But yeah, he made that up on the spot, and it made the movie.
Did.
Of all things.
So, I didn't know a lot about some of these acts. Sweetwater, did you know anything about Sweetwater?
No. A lot of those first night, I think they were a lot of folk-type people. Brett Sommer, I know, was folk.
Arlo Guthrie.
Tim Harden was another one, yeah.
10-song set for Sweetwater. By the time they got there, it was already after 6. They got stuck in traffic. Imagine that, you know, everybody getting stuck in traffic. Some people just left their magic buses on the side of the road.
That's right.
Played in the rain for 45 minutes. That was the whole evening, the weekend, right straight through, wasn't it? It just rained, sometimes harder than others. Ravi Shankar played in that rain, made his first appearance in the States since the Monterey Pop Festival a couple years earlier.
Yeah, and that set at the Monterey Pop Festival went down in history, obviously. It was in the movie, and it was fantastic. I noticed that they didn't include him in the movie, probably because he'd been such a main feature of Monterey Pop.
Only had 4 songs. He wasn't happy about the drug use or the party crowd of the young people there.
Ah, well.
So he wasn't very happy about that. But Melanie Safka, known, of course, as Melanie, wrote a song about her experience playing in the rain with the candle, with the lighters lighting up.
Candles in the rain.
Yep. Lay down, lay down, lay down. Arlo Guthrie performed between Melanie and Joan Baez, and Joan wrapped up day one, performing that 14-song set, starting right around 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. We Shall Overcome, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, started raining heavily by the time she was finished. But she was just a perfect performer
for that event. Yes, it was made for her.
Did you know anybody, they had to be older by then, you know, in 18, 19, or 20, or older, that went, or at least
I've never met a single soul who has admitted going.
I've never either, and I haven't.
Which is odd, because I have been so much a part of rock and roll, has been so much part of my life.
Yeah.
It's odd that I never ran into anybody, but no, nobody.
It's not like I'm asking every single person who's older. Hey, we're
no, Woodstock, no. But yeah, it would have been the people about 8 to 10 years older than me that would have been there. You know,
what was Wavy Gravy's 21. Role? In the whole thing.
He was the head of the hog farm, and they were busy trying to feed people because they figured out that all the food that they, you know, the outside vendors that were going to sell food, you know, like you normally would, mm-hmm. were out of food by Friday evening. So there was no food other than what people had brought and what Wavy Gravy and his hog farm folks could make up. So they actually had a big, you know, line and just had people come in, just fed them as much as they could.
Did it have anything to do with maybe helping some people along who were on a bad trip or something?
Oh, I'm sure
like that?
They did. I'm sure they did.
Day two started with the New York club band Quill. Country Joe McDonald sang a solo set without the Fish. They'd come back later on to play together. Santana, relatively unknown at the time, they got the gig over Chicago Transit Authority. Why is that, Frankie? Chicago, they just got started. I'm not sure they would have been a good fit, though, because Blood, Sweat, and Tears was also on the bill.
That's true. They were.
And for an unknown band, I think it might have been better for Santana to be there in the long run.
It might have been. I guess they were both being managed by Bill Graham at the time, and he just decided that Chicago had
other things to
concert
do.
Commitments that they had to keep, and that was that.
Yeah, and Bill Graham, when what he said, people listened.
Absolutely.
John Sebastian originally not on the schedule, but they had a hard time finding people to perform, so I don't know if they picked him out of the crowd or...
Him in that psychedelic shirt that he had. Yeah. He'll never live that down.
Keith Hartley Band, the first British band to perform there at Woodstock. The Who was going later on. The Incredible String Band refused to play on Friday because of the rain. Folk songs and psychedelic influences were all the rage. Canned Heat played their hits going up in the country on the road again. They met with favorable response, I think.
Fantastic group.
Mountain, Grateful Dead, CCR. Mm-hmm. Now, CCR was the first group to sign for, I guess, $10,000. But they were upset that they had to go on stage after 12:30 in the morning. This is now going into Sunday because of the extra long set by the Grateful Dead.
Yeah, who knew?
So being
the Grateful Dead might go on. They played like a 40-minute version of "Let Your Love Light" or something like that.
But CCR, they would understandably be upset. They were their first group.
Yeah,
to
they
be
were
signed.
Supposed to be. Yeah, and they were supposed to be right at prime time and. John Fogerty said by the time they got on, everybody was asleep. In fact, he saw a guy about
too.
A quarter mile away on the hill, had his lighter going, and he decided to play for that guy. And that's what they did. They played for him.
Janis Joplin played like 2 in the morning. She had left the Big Brother in the holding company,
was
playing
yep.
with a group called the Cosmic Blues Band.
Mm-hmm.
And then The Who took the stage. The second last act ahead of Jefferson Airplane started playing around 5 in the morning with the Tommy album. The last song was about a little after 6 with the sunrise.
Good grief. Literally, as we spoke of, they were leaving their cars just anywhere.
Yeah.
So and it had rained. So so now the trick was, how are we going to get out of here?
Won't allow four-wheel drive vehicles around.
No,
here.
Not then.
There has to be a time when you are wondering when you're going to get to the venue, and then you stay there for a while, and then you start thinking about how you're going to get
how
home.
How you're going to get home, yeah. And I suppose it had a lot to do with how much just food you had. I mean, if you had food, if you had brought stuff with you and you were able to make it, you might stay longer.
There weren't the food trucks and the refreshment stands that there are now.
Absolutely not.
So The Who played a 24-song set to begin the day. Jefferson Airplane, scheduled as the headliner for Saturday, didn't take the stage till about 8 a.m. Sunday. Things were all backed up.
Yeah, they had breakfast.
breakfast
with
the airplane.
Jefferson Airplane.
Joe Cocker took the stage at 2 p.m., not well known at the time, but he was afterwards. That 13-song set of his... with the finale, With a Little Help from My Friends.
And if you've seen that in the movie, you know how, that was really something.
So day 3, Sunday, really got cooking, didn't it? Good groups. Country Joe and the Fish resumed on stage early evening after another torrential thunderstorm.
Yeah, I guess as soon as Joe Cocker got off there, another inch of rain fell.
Jeez.
And what a mess that might have been.
10 years after, technical difficulties prevented them from staying in tune, their instruments, and apparently for the ensuing documentary, they were only allowed to capture one song of theirs, I'm Going Home, and Alvin Lee, one of the greatest guitarists of all time.
Right, yeah, I think they called it him blindingly soulless, is how they came up with that line. But if you've seen the movie, of course, you know exactly what they're talking about. Just blindingly is the way he played that guitar. and like he was on fire.
The band? Do you know anything about the band? I know a few of the tunes. I didn't get with them until college.
The night they drove Old Dixie down is probably my the one I know the best. But I also do know, like, Chest Fever was one of their good songs. And The Weight, of course.
Yeah, I wish I had gotten with them a little sooner than I did. They had already broken up. And by the time I started listening to anything from the band, I was already 20 years old.
Exactly.
I didn't really hear a lot of them earlier. Johnny Winter played there, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. 1:30 in the morning, early Monday, they came on stage. And
I can't imagine what that must have been like, coming on stage at 1:30 in the morning.
I know rockers are used to staying up late. Some even don't go to bed, they'll tell you. But 1:30 in the morning, that's kind of late.
Right, exactly.
So Sly and the Family Stone, I guess, was on Sunday morning, 3:30 in the morning. They were considered to have one of their best live performances then. Did they make it to the documentary?
Yes, they did. And boy, when you see that, somebody once said that... Sly and the Family Stone, Sly played like his afro was on fire. And boy, I'm telling you, he did. And it's an incredible show. And the call and response with I'm Gonna Take You Higher is just incredible.
Well, we already mentioned a couple of the great tunes they had in 69, too. So they were on fire that year. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. Neil sat out most of the acoustic set. It was only the second time they performed together live, so they were petrified. Their first gig was just the day before at a little place in Chicago. So off to New York they went, and wow, the crowd, huge crowd, and although it started dwindling, I imagine, by...
I would think by
then,
time,
people had really had it, I think, even the younger
And a lot
folks.
Of people had somewhere to be on Monday. You know, it was a work day.
That's true.
Yeah.
Paul Butterfield Blues Band started around 6 a.m. on Monday, and they also played at the Monterey Pop Festival. Shanana was there. Now, most of
Which is one of the weirdest things ever.
Yeah, it's like having a comedian on stage or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Grateful Dead played a little longer.
Yes.
Jimi Hendrix scheduled as the final performance for Saturday night, but thanks to all the delays, didn't take the stage until early in the morning. Most people had left or packing up their gear and trying to figure out how to get home.
Exactly, you know. A lot of them took one look at him and left, you know, said, okay, I've seen him, and got out.
So I thought that Jimi Hendrix only had Star Spangled Banner or one or two others.
Purple Haze.
I didn't know it was that long.
He's fantastic. It's a shame that more people weren't there for his set, but by that time, they'd had enough.
Yeah.
They were tired. They'd been through it all with the weekend, and it was time for them to go.
What do you think of Jimi Hendrix overall as an artist? We haven't talked a lot about him.
Fantastic artist, probably the greatest guitar player I've ever heard. Doesn't mean I liked everything he did or anything like that, but boy, he probably had more imagination than anybody that's ever played the instrument. Quote by Robert Fripp, who in himself is a great guitar player, said, I could say everything that Jimmy can say, I just don't have that much to say.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect way of put it. I just don't have that much to say. Who had that much to say?
Such a unique artist. Others have tried, I'm sure, and some may have come close, but Jimi Hendrix is in a class by himself.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, the movie, the documentary, released a year later, selected later on by the U.S. National Film Registry in 1996, one of those that they preserve forever. It's known as the benchmark of concert movies. The budget was only a little more than $500,000, but they made...
And it shows.
Yeah, it shows, right. But they made over $50 million.
Yeah. Because of what happened with the attendance, and they obviously stopped collecting money... they were in the red for quite a while until they started making money off the movie and then, of course, off the soundtrack.
Kind of fun to think about. If they had a follow-up to Woodstock, maybe they had a different venue, more security, refreshment stands and that. Woodstock 71 or something. You know, the protests were still going on. But some of the artists that we didn't know a lot about or at all in 1969, if they had had a Woodstock just 2 years later, I think it's kind of fun to think about who would have been a good fit there. And for me, James Taylor would have been good. Don McLean, Rare Earth. Jackson Browne would have been a natural fit, I think.
Absolutely.
The Allman Brothers, Cat Stevens, Eddie Kendricks just came out. He had left the Temptations on his own. John Lennon was going to be a solo artist. He would have been a good fit, too. What do you think about some of those artists or anybody else?
Absolutely. What's interesting is some of the ones that actually did turn him down, like Led Zeppelin, Simon and Garfunkel was one that just turned down the gig. Said,
yeah, they were working on a new album, they said.
Yeah. The Doors also, Jethro Tull, The Guess Who, Spirit, The Rascals, The Moody Blues, and, of course, a little band called the Rolling Stones.
The Stones. Yeah. Keith
they had their own Woodstock, as they called it, Altamont, which turned into a disaster a few months later.
Procol Harum was just completing a long tour. Jeff Beck Group. You know, they were all invited. Iron Butterfly, what happened to them? They were supposed to be there, weren't they?
They got stuck at LaGuardia Airport, from what I heard, and asked if they would send some helicopters to fly them in. And they were politely told, kind of get your own helicopter. We'll see you when you get here.
And they didn't. Bob Dylan did play at the Island of Wight 2 weeks later. Rumor has it he used the old sick kid excuse, as did the group Free. They were invited but also declined. They all would have been great. Moody Blues were on the original promotional poster, but wound up playing in Paris instead. So
really?
Like them, like Zeppelin, Joni Mitchell, they didn't. Not necessarily didn't want to be there, but they wanted to headline their own show.
Right.
And do some other things with them as the featured performer. Some didn't know how big of an event this would be and thought of it as another Monterey. You know, the Birds were like that, I think.
Yeah, and I think some of the people that did show up there weren't even, like The Who, I know, hated the whole experience. And Pete Townsend's noted for kicking Abbie Hoffman off the stage. Yeah, so
I would have liked to have seen more R&B artists there. I know Sly was there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But Tina Turner would have been good. You know, Marvin Gaye would have been sensational. Richie Havens was
Stevie Wonder.
Oh, he would have been great. Yeah. Woodstock. I was still too young. It was a great summer. Just not as tumultuous as 68, but just a week before or 2 weeks before were the Manson murders, you know?
That's right.
Before that, a month before, was the Chappaquiddick, and we had a huge storm on the 4th of July in Cleveland, which came up out of nowhere.
Right.
And moon landing. So quite a summer that was, 69.
It was an incredible summer, and kind of topped off by Woodstock. And, you know, I think Joni Mitchell said she wrote the song watching what she saw on the TV. So that's how big of a thing it was.
Do you think some artists looked at it and maybe saw the documentary and said, you know what, I really wish I was a part of this after all?
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure there were a lot that did.
Why do you think they didn't have a follow-up, a Woodstock 71 or 75 or something? Do you think people had just moved on by then?
I think so. And I think they did, you know, obviously in years to follow, they would have more Woodstocks. Mm-hmm. None of them really worked for whatever reason.
Right. Try as they might,
they couldn't get, you can't redo something like that.
Yeah.
You tried to make it too perfect. You can't do that. It just happened.
A lot of it happened organically.
Exactly.
Yeah. It just happened. They got Max Jasger's farm kind of out of nowhere. They had these young promoters who had some of their, dad's money, I guess.
Yeah, Michael Lang, who was one of the main promoters, you know, had really done very little as far as promoting. I think he'd had done one other thing before that. So he had no business trying to take on a concert or anything this kind of size. And the fact that it worked and that there weren't more problems, there weren't more violence, because people were having trouble getting stuff to eat at the time. It's just amazed me that they were able to keep the peace as they did. And I guess that was kind of one cool thing that did happen. We'd have a lot of non-cool things that would happen later on, but at least that was one neat thing.
So I guess sometimes you don't need a follow-up. You don't need a volume two. You don't need sequels.
It's so hard to do. I mean, just look at people trying to follow up records, like trying to follow up Hotel California.
Yeah.
How do you do it? You don't make, it's almost impossible to make Hotel California 2. And with Woodstock, it was the same way. Really hard to make Woodstock 2. I mean, you're either going to go full bore and run into the same kind of problems, or you're going to have a lesser type thing. And that's usually what they've done, is have a lesser type concert venue. And, you know, it's kind of hit and miss, and who's ever popular at the time, maybe you get some of them to show up, maybe you don't.
I know they had a huge crowd at Central Park for Simon and Garfunkel's 1981, but they were the only guys playing.
Exactly, exactly.
And so other artists, maybe they moved into different directions too. They were busy touring, or they just didn't want to do it. They didn't want to be on stage sharing the bill with 14 other artists.
And you have to get the people there too. And the people have to look at it and go, I want to be there for 3 days? That's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, now with some of these things that they have for multi-days, it's like room service.
It's like going to a NASCAR.
Exactly.
Something. They bring their RVs and they spend the week or something.
Yes, exactly.
Wasn't like that back then, was it?
No, not at all.
And the road's getting in, and it's kind of like Blossom here in Cleveland area, the Coliseum. People didn't really mind back then, seemingly, to do stuff like that. Nowadays, they... You know, they say take mass transit, it's a lot easier, but nobody wants to do that because where are you going to carry all your stuff and your gear?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So,
but it did break out a lot of the bands, didn't it? Santana, I kind of wish Chicago was there, but I'm kind of glad they weren't there. But and Melanie and some groups we hadn't heard of before. Richie Havens, too. You know.
Yeah, and there are a lot of bands that either got their start there or were very early in their career got there. Or just kind of peaking like Sly and the Family Stone. So there were a lot of great things that came out of there.
I'm glad they made that documentary film.
Oh, absolutely.
It's preserved forever. I wish I could see it more on HBO or Cinemax or something, but once in a while it'll appear someplace.
Absolutely.
You can always call it up on YouTube or whatever if you don't already have the copy of it. So that's Woodstock 1969. I wish I had been there, and I'm kind of glad I wasn't.
Exactly.
Frankie, it's been so great having you a part of the show. I don't think I know I couldn't have done it without you, and your input is just fantastic.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Rock and roll expert Frank Ost. You can catch our Tim Friedman 70s Rock Conversation podcast on any of the major platforms, Apple iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, wherever you get your podcasts. So we really appreciate your downloading and subscribing and listening to our show. Here's what's coming up in Season 2. In Season 2, we're going to continue our rundown of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees starting in 2006 and going all the way back into the early part of the 90s. Our featured artists will include Billy Joel, Marvin Gaye, Allman Brothers, ELO, The Cars, Heart, and a whole lot more. Plus, we'll continue our one-hit wonders, and not-so-good songs will return as well in Season 2. Plus, a brand new feature called 5 Live. We'll talk about our favorite live albums of all time. That's all on the way next time around. I'm Tim Friedman for Rock and Roll Expert Frank Ost. Thanks so much for listening and for downloading and being a part of our podcast and making Season 1 so successful. We'll see you in Season 2 very soon.